This is Zeba Norman of the Transatlantic Institute, London. The following podcast comprises the highlights of a panel discussion organized by the Transatlantic Institute at the Frontline Club in London on 29 March 2007. Our debate on Karabakh opened with a decision to look to the future rather than laboring over historical details. Thomas Duval of the Institute of War and Peace Reporting set the tone, explaining the very real and imminent danger of allowing this conflict to remain frozen.
The situation is bad. The strange thing about this conflict is it's completely off the radar of the international media and international attention. And yet, potentially, if it were to start again, it would be one of the most serious international conflicts in an extremely strategically sensitive region, which now holds the Baku-Tbilisi-Tehran pipeline with Russia, Iran, Turkey, near neighbours.
Thomas Galtz, author and eyewitness of the events of the Khojaly massacre, felt the issues were rather clearer.
This is not a conflict about parity. The refugee situation in Azerbaijan is much more grievous than that in Armenia. The numbers are much more grievous than that in Armenia. And finally, my colleague and friend Tom Duval once took apart this piece of Azerbaijani propaganda that Armenia is in occupation of 20% of Azerbaijan. What was the real number?
13.6.
14% or so. That, my friends, is the argument of, dear daddy, I'm just a little bit pregnant. Armenia remains in occupation of Azerbaijan, whether you count Karabakh into the mix or not.
Thomas Duval continued by stressing that a resumption of hostilities would be far worse than during the last war, as both sides are now better armed. The Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline is, of course, only a few miles away from the boundaries of the disputed territory, and its smooth operation could not be guaranteed. Thomas Duval disputed the oft-made comparison of the conflict to that in Cyprus.
If you compare it, for example, to other relevant conflicts, compare it to Cyprus, which is also bad, that both sides are basically sort of growing around the conflict. That's impossible in Karabakh. There are large areas of Azerbaijan which are completely destroyed. Large numbers of displaced people. The longest border in the Caucasus still closed. And trenches down that line with snipers facing each other across it. So this is not a green line in Cyprus. This is a much more dangerous, much more unstable situation.
Having established the gravity of the situation, we asked why, 13 years after a ceasefire, a permanent solution is still as elusive as ever. One theme that recurred amongst the panelists and the audience was the lack of broad engagement in both Armenia and Azerbaijan with the people of these nations, the result of this being a manipulation for political purposes of the issues involved. Armenia was chastised for redrawing the map to include the disputed frozen region, as if it were internationally recognized as part of Armenia, which it is not, whilst Azerbaijan was criticized for stirring up the issues, creating a dangerous form of nationalism. Famil Ishmaelov of the BBC spoke of the mechanics of this manipulation and the blind alley down which it is leading Azerbaijan.
There's no debate at all whatsoever. And both sides are trying to represent Karabakh problem in the light of the political elite. I was talking to a leading editor of one of the most nationalistic television channels, I consider to the most nationalistic television channels in Azerbaijan. And what he told me, absolutely amazing, he said, you see, at the moment we are very anti-Armenian because they're trying to apply pressure on Armenia. So Armenia goes more soft on negotiation, goes on compromise. And as soon as Ilham Aliyev and Robert Kocharyan sign a peace deal, or are anyway close to it, they're about to sign a peace deal, we'll completely change the song and we'll tell that Armenians are our best brothers ever. And I just realized that they think of the whole debate as a PR exercise, and that absolutely devastated me. And at the end of the day, the problem is there's 3 or 4 years on that we can see how the Azerbaijani media being very nationalistic about the whole issue of Karabakh. And now we can see that there's, well, one, no empathy, and Firdevs Robinson from the BBC Turk comes to Azerbaijan and Grantin gets murdered. She grieves and nobody understands. And they just say, who is he? Armenian? Oh, that's it then. You know, you don't have to be about it. And that's the result of just 4 years of just saying that, you know, well, those Armenians, you know. That reminds me of very, very bad examples and very bad lessons of the early 20th century. And that's wrong, and that will take the whole nation to suffer even more psychological damage when it comes to a real peace deal. Nobody will accept any deal at all if it goes like that. At the end of the day, the debate has to start now.
Mark Gregorian, analyst and writer, discussed the rise of nationalism in the region more generally.
And obviously I see here a very serious problem, which is growing nationalism. And when we put that into the context of the Caucasus, we see that this threat of nationalism is becoming even more important these days with the Georgian disputes and with the saturation of arms, of armament, which is growing in the Caucasus, which makes the region even more dangerous. Thank you.
Interlinked with this discussion was a concern for the recognition of the other side, Azeri and Armenian, for one another. Firdevs Robinson from the BBC World Service raised this issue.
But there's one thing that is missing in Azerbaijan and Armenia, and that is the empathy for the other side's suffering. Now, I spent years covering Cyprus stories, and there's one thing that I noticed in Cyprus that I don't notice in Armenia and Azerbaijan. That is the refugees feeling the other side's pain. I mean, there's a saying in Cyprus, nobody knows what it is like to be a refugee, but a refugee. I never felt that in Azerbaijan. And in my very limited experience of Armenia, I don't really feel that either. And I agree with you, I think that the young generations are not feeling each other's pain. You don't have the empathy. I was in Azerbaijan a few days after my friend Hrant Dink was murdered. And I was really grieving for his death. And I found no sympathy from anybody.
Some of this lack of empathy can be attributed to the charged rhetoric employed in the media. My recent experiences in Azerbaijan as a lecturer at Khazar University suggest that not all Azeris feel comfortable with this tone and misplaced patriotism. All of this, of course, coming back to the main theme of the need to open discussions more widely within both communities. Thomas Duval on these issues.
I don't think that actually that the Minsk group should disband. I think in some ways, this dispute is quite lucky to have three very important powers, America, Russia, and France, as its mediators. I think if the alternative was a Finnish diplomat, I think you would probably want to have Washington, Moscow, and Paris involved. I think the Minsk group should stay as the vanguard of a much broader effort, including people like the UN, including PP, including all sorts of institutions and governments, getting engaged in this issue, deciding that this is the most important issue in the Caucasus.
And he also calls categorically for the Azeri government to change their language.
The first thing that has got to change in this dispute is the way the elites, the kind of language the elites use about it. Nothing's going to change on the ground, but the elites, as we know, dominate the media, they dominate the discourse. They have to, the first thing that has to change is the way they talk about it. Stop using the very short-termist, aggressive language. And
sorry,
start leaving.
Is that BP?
No, 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 the elites. But then this is the message that BP has to deliver. Is BP, I think, should have legitimate concerns about the future of its pipeline. And so the message that they have to give to the elites is change your language, start talking, stop fanning the flames of aggression amongst your population. Start leaving room in your public statements for the idea that there's going to be a peaceful solution. Start a discourse about dialogue.
Both panelists and audience seem to agree that the failure to resolve the conflict would eventually result in resumption of hostilities, but some seem to see this as a longer-term problem, at least as long as the oil boom is sustained. I used my privilege as chair to express doubt about this.
I did feel that people were almost polishing their guns as I spoke to them. I don't think we have a 15 or 20-year period for the oil to run out.
Given the mix of factors in the region, both cultural and religious, the interplay between them could easily yield unpredictable results if Karabakh is not placed high on the international agenda, backed by the political will to see a lasting solution. and this needs to come from both the Armenian and the Azeri governments. A failure to do this is likely to result in a situation that neither the governments nor the vast majority of the people in both nations would want. Sadly, the phantom stability created by freezing this conflict has made this outcome all too likely.